Their argument has to number 06-1569, General Mills against Kraft Foods.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. May it please the Court. Kraft claims the benefit of a covenant not to sue. That covenant not to sue has its genesis in the agreement between General Mills and a company called Farley. And that covenant not to sue was found as Appendix B to a settlement agreement that resolved his patent litigation. Kraft claims to be a successor to Farley under that covenant not to sue. Kraft goes even further, claiming in this case that once a successor, always a successor. That's the foundation of their defense to our patent infringement case. That is wrong as a matter of law, and it is wrong as a matter of the facts under this case.
You don't disagree that Kraft is a successor under the agreement?
At one time, Your Honor,
up to Caterton.
Up till Caterton, Kraft.
Caterton destroyed the successor status of Kraft, at least that's what you're arguing below.
That's our argument, yes.
But you're not arguing that they didn't succeed to the agreement in the first instance.
In the first instance, we concede that they, in fact, succeeded to the agreement, and that the way they succeeded to that agreement actually proves our point here.
And the transaction with Caterton didn't breach the agreement, you conceded that below, right?
The transaction didn't breach any specific clause of the agreement because there was nothing to stop Kraft from deciding to take what was Farley and parcel it off piece by piece for money, which is exactly what they did when they sold a piece.
What would happen if Farley, instead of selling itself lock, stock, and barrel to Kraft, Farley had said, you know, we're going to kind of go out of the candy business, we've got to a couple of production runs for Christmas. We want to continue to make this stuff that we can make pursuant to the government's not to sue. But we're going to dispose of virtually all of our stuff to in a kind of a breakup. We're going to sell half of our stuff to Kraft, half of our stuff to somebody else, and whatever. And we're going to keep, in essence, the covenant just for the period of time so we can sell off our inventory.
That is asking...
What would have happened was that Farley would have broken itself up. Why wouldn't it have lost successor status, if you will?
It very well might be right. In fact, the question that arises as a result of your hypothetical is how much of Farley need there be for someone down the road to claim that they're Farley? Or how much of Farley needs to be left if Farley would have done something under your hypothetical to retain the successor status? You know the answer to that. The answer to that is found by looking at the settlement agreement, because the settlement agreement says in it that the agreement can be transferred, and the benefits and rights and obligations of the agreement can be transferred if certain listed assets are transferred. And those listed assets are found in the settlement agreement, Your Honor. I believe it's in 8.4, which is on appendix page 487. And it's very clear that Farley must transfer its entire Roll Food product business, including without limitation, all assets, goodwill, and trademarks to the party to whom the rights and obligations are being assigned.
Now, that doesn't identify the nature of the business in terms of any point in time or in terms of any level of activity or productivity. For example, if this agreement was signed toward the end of 1996, correct?
Yes, it was signed on November 1996.
So what would happen if Farley, just in the normal course of business subsequent to November of 96, had a little bit of a downturn, pared back some of its manufacturing facilities, maybe decreased some of its sales, and at that point, 2 or 3 years after the agreement, signed its entire food product business. Would that still meet the terms of this agreement?
Yes, and here's the reason why. The key time here, and I think it's explicit, at least implicit from this agreement, is at the time rights and obligations are attempting to be assigned. That's what 8.4 says. So if you're looking at what time frame do you measure what's Farley's roll food business with respect to someone later claiming benefit of it, it's whatever that rolled food business was, provided there was in fact a rolled food business, at the time of the transfer. So
isn't that what happened in this case? That at the time of the transfer, its entire food product business, all its assets, goodwill, and trademarks were conveyed to Kraft.
Correct.
What difference does it make? If it doesn't make any difference before the transfer, why should it make a difference after?
Because Kraft claims that it is a successor to Farley, but it in fact is Farley. And if what they do is they take Farley in 2001 and they become Farley, but later on decide, well, you know, there's a market out there for part of what was the rolled food business of Farley, the trademarks and the goodwill, for example. And
that's why I asked, when do you look to what it was that's transferred? And if you're saying you look to the time of the transfer, then it seems to me it shouldn't make any difference.
No, you only look to the initial transfer. In other words, Farley had the ability, because we cut a deal with Farley, that Farley could have sold some assets under a hypothetical business downturn, maybe they parceled off some assets, and they then could have sold whatever it was Farley's rolled food business at that time to Kraft. Kraft, however, can't come in and take those assets and decide to split them. Here's another way of asking the question. Whatever Kraft had, how much had to be left for them still to have the benefit of the successor status under the covenant not to sue?
You're saying in 8.4a, where it says Farley must transfer its entire rolled food product, that entire rolled food product rolls in time, right? Because I thought Judge Lynn was asking, what happens if Farley, shortly after this agreement, gets rid of half of its rolled food business, just gets rid of half of it?
If Farley gets rid of half of its rolled food
business, then could Farley nonetheless then make a transfer under 8.4 to Kraft of everything that's left?
Well, that question posed that way, the answer is Farley may be able to continue to obtain the benefit of the agreement, but nobody else could. Again, we have to come back to
why.
That's not the answer I thought.
If Farley had gotten rid of half of his business, the downturn, right?
What if Kraft?
Then how can its successor, how can it enjoy the covenant not to sue?
Another variation on that question is, what if Kraft had sold every single piece of the business but the covenant not to sue attached to
it? Your argument is that successor means successor to the whole kit and caboodle, as opposed to successor to a piece of Farley's assets.
You to be a successor, you have to be what the company was at their
lot.
Well, because otherwise, we could be in a situation where the current Farley, that is a company formed by Caterton that has the trademark that was used to manufacture rolled products, what would stop them from going out manufacturing a rolled food product. We sue them, and they say, wait a minute. There's a covenant not to sue here. It's Appendix B. Here's what it says. Farley's off the hook, and its successor's off the hook. We're Farley. Our name is Farley. We have trademarks that are Farley. Our business looks just like the Farley that was in existence at the time General Mills did.
I'm a little confused as to the interrelationship between 1.6, the agreement, and 8.4. 1.6 says every successor gets treated as Farley. And so there were no 8.4 at all. I take it the ordinary law of successorship, this seems to basically invoke the common law of successorship, would mean that anybody who qualified as a successor would enjoy the benefits of that agreement, correct?
Kraft does not get...
Well, then listen, before we get to Kraft, let's just make sure we're on the same page here with respect to that legal proposition, correct?
I don't think so, because that's not what gets Farley or anyone else off the hook. It's the covenant not to sue that gets one off the hook. And
well,
that's
but what this 1.6 says is we're defining Farley to include all successors.
Yes.
So a successor, which would include, I take it, somebody who bought the business lock, stock, and barrel, would be a successor.
Right, but that's
not... Therefore, if Kraft buys the business lock, stock, and barrel, they are a successor. They own everything, including all rights under this agreement, without regard to 8.4, correct?
Yes, under that scenario. Because they would be... They would own all the listed assets of 8.4 under that scenario. The question comes down to, what is a successor? And can you lose that status? You absolutely can lose the status. Kraft, as it sits here today, does not claim that it is a successor under this agreement. It parceled some of those listed assets, some of the assets that was Farley, they parceled them off. They haven't parceled the trademark off because they did that earlier, or the goodwill because they did that earlier, but they took the rest and they sold it to Kellogg. And now they're not a successor. So you can, in fact, lose successor status. The question is, when did they lose successor status? They certainly lost it by their own admission when they sold the assets that remained of the rolled food business to Kellogg. We claim that they lost that successor status in 2002 when they sold it to Caterton. And I need to save some time for rebuttal, but I just direct the court, when you get the chance, to go to the red brief at page 15, which is where their argument starts. It goes from page 15 to page 21, and they don't cite a single case for the proposition. Not a single case for the proposition that once a successor, always a successor. They only cite two cases in there. One is the case we cite favorably. They try to distinguish it. And another is for this general proposition that forfeitures are disfavored. There's no case that they cite that's even close to the facts in this case that supports their proposition that once a successor, always a successor. Because there is no case. They lost successor status. They lost it when they decided to take what was Farley and break it up into pieces and make money doing it by selling it to a private equity firm. And they should not now be able to come in and claim that they get the benefit of the entire agreement when the bargain was Farley would stay together.
Okay, we'll stay for this. Thank you for rebuttal. Ms. Harrison.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the court. General Mills' repeated reference and reliance on Article 8.4 sows real confusion here. Article 8.4 is not a forfeiture provision. Article 8.4 does not provide when or if a successor ceases to be a successor. Article 8.4 is strictly concerned with the issue of when a successor such as Kraft was can transfer the rolled food products business of Farley together with the protections of the settlement agreement. And that article provides that it may transfer the protections of the settlement agreement, but only if it transfers the, quote, entire rolled food products business. It's a limitation on assignment of the benefits of the settlement agreement. It does not in any manner suggest or address that a successor, once a successor, can lose that status. It does not once suggest that a successor, an admitted successor that sells, as in this case, what is essentially a single asset belonging to the Farley Candy Company, its trade name and associated goodwill, forfeits just like that all of the benefits of the settlement agreement. And not only is this not an 8.4, Mr. Shoup says over and over, and General Mills says in its brief over and over, this is what the agreement provides. It's nowhere in the agreement. Nowhere in the agreement does it provide that the sale of any asset, whether it's the Farley brand name, or a factory, or a piece of office equipment, or a particular trademark, will result in a forfeiture of benefits under the settlement agreement. So this case is very straightforward. It's one that invokes principles of contract interpretation that are virtually universal. It involves the law that abhors a forfeiture, which is virtually universal. In order for there to be a forfeiture, a contract has to contain a clear expression. It has to give warning to Kraft that by selling an asset, poof, its rights are going to go away. Kraft could not look at that settlement agreement and discern from the face of that settlement agreement that the sale of the Farley trade name, not a Rolled Food Products trade name, even, but the sale of the Farley brand name would result in a forfeiture of all of the benefits of that agreement.
So I take it that your position is that this case is controlled by two things. One is Section 1.6 of the agreement, which invokes it seems to invoke the common law of successorship, and two, the common law of successorship. And therefore, you would say as long as under common law principles, Kraft is a successor, then nothing in the rest of the agreement says that Kraft loses anything.
Now, that's right.
In a nutshell, I guess.
That's quite right. And if the parties intended otherwise, and there are many, many statements in the briefs about what the parties intended. They intended this to be personal to Farley and so on. If they really intended that, you would think that it would be so much as hinted at.
Okay, well, let's assume you're right about that. Then why is somebody who sells the entire business except for one contract right of the business, why does that party remain a successor?
Because it's...
What in the law of successorship?
Well, because it still owns that contract, right? It's still a successor.
Well, suppose it doesn't own that contract right, but it owns a contract right to use the swimming pool at the local YMCA. Is it still a successor to that corporation, as opposed to the party that just purchased it, everything except the contractual right to use the swimming pool for its employees?
I think it is.
Are they both successors?
There can be multiple successors.
Well, I guess the problem is that Mr. Schutz sort of challenges you on this, because he says you don't cite any cases for the proposition that Kraft really is a successor. He says that you can't simply sell everything but the tiniest smidgen of a business's rights, and an inchoate right at that, and then claim that you continue to be a successor. Can you point us to something that says that's not right?
Well, I don't have a case to cite that says that's not right, nor does Mr. Schutz have a case to say that that is right. But under the common law of successors, there can be multiple successors. A successor by merger obtains the assets of the company and all the rights and liabilities of the company.
Yeah, it's the other way around, though. It's the divestiture issue that's a problem, isn't it?
Well, it is.
Seems to be.
But if a company thereafter sells three business units and keeps one, isn't it still a successor with respect to that business unit?
Fortunately, they pay us to ask the questions, not to answer.
Can we make anything?
It's rhetorical.
I understand.
Should we make anything of the fact that the covenant not to sue, Exhibit B at A496, obviously provides for the release by General Mills of Farley and all of its successors without any limitation?
I do believe so. And again, this goes to the issue of forfeiture and fair notice to a successor of Farley Candy Company, which Kraft, again, admittedly was. There was no question. And I might point out that the complaint does not allege that Kraft sold everything but the rights to the settlement agreement. It alleges that it sold the Farley trade name and goodwill. That's all.
Yeah, I would have thought your answer to Judge Bryson would be that we don't have to reach your difficult hypothetical.
And I think that's right, because they allege that we sold What is essentially what asset, because Kraft's will goes with
Kraft. When Kraft did the deal with Cadbury, what did they keep of Farley's business besides the covenant not to sue?
The World Food Products business, which was the subject of the settlement agreement. They sold the caramel and confectionery business. And the company that exists now that has, in part, the Farley's name is Farley and Savers Candy Company, obviously not the same corporation. So what we kept were all of the other World Food Products assets. And we don't believe that the brand name was part of those assets. We just sold the Farley brand name to go with the confectionery business, caramels, what have you.
Did Kraft have a separate World Food business aside from what was obtained from Farley?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Now, one other question, sort of on the periphery, perhaps even periphery at best, but I'm kind of curious because it's sort of lurking here. The Kellogg sale, what is there, if that sale does require, I take it, the invocation of 8.3 and 8.4.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And if that sale is valid, then presumably Kraft does lose its protection of the agreement.
Agreed.
So I take it that there's no argument that any infringement occurred on the part, at least of Kraft, after the transfer of Kellogg?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Okay, so, I mean, because, otherwise...
After Patterson and up to Kellogg...
That's what we're talking, that's the window.
Correct, and for Your Honor's information, I believe it's set forth in the briefs, there is another lawsuit currently pending in the federal court in Minnesota that addresses just that, which is the assignment and sale of the World Food Products business from Kraft to Kellogg in 2005.
But that doesn't affect the patent liability issue, I take it, because Kraft, whatever Kraft was doing prior to the sale to Kellogg, is no longer doing, at least that General Mills is arguing.
Correct, that's correct. Just a few, I mean, obviously I'm happy to answer any questions that the panel has. You know, in terms of once a successor, always a successor, there has been a suggestion that there is some ambiguity in the term successor in a footnote in the brief. But obviously, it's been admitted over and over again that Kraft was a successor.
Well, for a while. There's no doubt they were for a while. The tough question becomes, were they all the way through? And as to that, there's decided disagreement.
Well, just looking at the implications, though, of General Mills' argument, and I think it's important to consider those implications, what they're really saying is that you can be a successor through merger, through acquisition, through an asset purchase, however, and that you can sell a single asset and lose your status without having any fair warning in the agreement that conferred the protections on you. That is an extremely illogical, implausible, and from a business perspective, nonsensical result. But that is, in essence, what they're arguing, because they've alleged in this complaint that the sale of, in essence, one asset, not of the World Food Products division, but of Farley Candy Company as a whole, divested it of its rights under a settlement agreement, which pertained only to the World Food Products. In terms of the claims that this agreement was personal to Farley, that's something that's stated over and over again, both in the briefs and I believe in oral argument. I think the fact that Kraft was admittedly a successor is probably the best evidence that that argument isn't plausible. And if 8.4 is relevant at all, 8.4 itself states that Farley can sell its World Food Products business along with the protections of the settlement agreement to a third party, so long as it does it in a bundle with that business unit. So any idea that it was the party's intent that it would forever be Farley is contradicted by 8.4. And furthermore, there's no hint in this agreement that Kraft or any other successor was required to even use the Farley name. It could have the Farley brand name, but never use it. So the logic behind the idea that somehow the sale of that brand name caused the rights under this agreement to evaporate is simply absent. Does the panel have any other questions?
But Farley, the alleged infringement was by Farley in the world food business, is that right?
Pardon me?
The alleged infringement that led to the agreement and the covenant not to sue Farley, right, infringing on General Mills' patent?
I believe there were also counterclaims by
What was Farley making?
Fruit rolls.
Fruit roll food.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so after the Caterton transaction, Kraft continues to engage in the roll food business.
Correct.
Right. Selling a roll food product that they might claim isn't infringing because they became 100% successor when they complied with 8.4.
Well,
it's not as if Kraft had sold off the Caterton to roll food business.
No, Kraft did not sell the roll food business to Caterton, and it remained a successor because it retained the roll food business and the settlement agreement.
Yeah. Let me make sure of something, because it's been raised by Judge Clevenger's question, and I think I may have a misapprehension here, which I need to clear up. When Kraft obtained Farley, there was not compliance with 8.4, correct?
Correct.
Right. It was just a... Okay. It was a straight successorship.
Yes.
So there... Again, I get back to this 1.6 versus 8.4. That
right.
was simply an exercise of rights that had been preserved to the parties under 1.6. It didn't trigger 8.4. I mean, the two rub up against one another, but I understood that that was not an instance, unlike the Kellogg transaction, in which 8.4 was at issue, right?
It's not like the Kellogg transaction where there was an attempt to sell the...
Did Farley give General Mills notice of...
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
Oh, they did?
Transaction?
Okay.
Yes.
Of Kraft?
Yes.
And
there were
obligated under 8.4B, right?
There were a series of transactions of bankruptcy sales, mergers, etc., and they were all transactions of which General Mills was notified.
Oh, so you well, I'm once again confused. Is it your position that 8.4, the requirements of 8.4, apply to those transactions that resulted in the transfer of Farley to Kraft?
I beg your pardon, could you restate
that? Yeah, sure. In other words, when Farley exists.
Mm-hmm.
Farley is transferred through a series of transactions, as you just described, to Kraft.
Correct.
Right. Was there a requirement that General Motors, General Mills, be advised of those transactions and that transfer? Or was that simply a transfer of all rights that simply reflects a successorship as to which 8.4 would not be applicable?
Well, I'm not sure whether it was required, but it was accepted by General Mills, and General Mills was notified.
I see.
Well, doesn't 8.4B say Farley must provide General Mills with 68 written notice prior to the transfer of rights and obligation under this agreement?
It does. And they were.
And that would certainly suggest, in order for Farley to vest Kraft with the benefits, among other things, of the government not to sue, that notice would have to be given.
Correct.
But
there's no question, again, it's admitted that Kraft did become a successor under the settlement agreement via the provisions of 8.4.
But if that's true, now I want to make sure that my notion that 1.6 gives an independent basis for concluding that there are rights that transfer quite apart from whether the more restrictive terms of 8.4 allow a transfer. 8.4 says that in order for there to be a transfer of rights in the agreement, you must transfer the entire rolled food product business without limitation, all assets, goodwill, and trademarks to the party to whom the rights and obligations are being assigned. That would be, I would think, more restrictive than the normal law of successorship, where you could remain, you could be a successor even if you didn't convey all the rights and all the interests in the property that's at issue. Wouldn't that be true?
It may be more restrictive and appears more restrictive, and I agree that it does rub up against 1.6.
So which governs 8.4? In other words, should we be saying, well, anything that doesn't satisfy 8.4 cannot be regarded as a valid successorship under 1.6?
Well, I don't think in this case it matters, and here's why.
Okay.
Because if there has been a valid assignment to Kraft pursuant to 8.4, which General Mills has admitted repeatedly that there has, and indeed has affirmatively alleged in their briefs, then Kraft becomes a successor to the settlement agreement.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Schutz.
Thank you, Your Honor. The analysis needs to be from the covenant not to sue back to the agreement. Covenant not to sue says Farley and its successors are off the hook. So what's Farley? You go back, and 8.4 informs us what Farley is for purposes of this. It's the rolled food business. They didn't sell Kraft, that is, did not sell just any old asset. They sold listed assets. When we look at Farley and its successors, what's that? Let's go to the agreement. 8.4 says, hey, you can parcel stuff off as long as you sell the entire rolled food business, including trademarks and goodwill. And it's undisputed that the relevant trademarks and goodwill of the rolled food business were parceled off in 2002 in Canada. And so that's why they lost successor status. They sold listed assets. So what kind of rule, because this is at some point a case of first impression coming out of this court, and there is some guidance. We do cite a couple of cases coming out of Minnesota on, you know, what's a successor. And if you don't have all the rights that were there originally, you're not a successor. So if there are listed assets in an agreement, can someone still be a successor to that agreement, even though those listed assets that the parties negotiated for have been parceled off? That rule would create chaos in the marketplace. We had a bargain. We had a bargain. Farley's off the hook. Any successor's off the hook. And what's a successor? The agreement's pretty clear on what a successor is. It's not some other aspect of Farley. It's the rolled food business of Farley. And that was bargained for. They could have said, wait a minute, we don't want that restriction in here. It's a bargained for restriction. Farley is what's the rolled food business, plus the relevant trademarks, and the goodwill. They decided to parcel those off. And now they want to come into court and say, we can parcel off listed assets that the parties bargained for. And still we
so
can't.
Yeah, but we stay in the rolled food business, and we continue to sell what would be an infringing product, and we think we were a successor to Farley. We think we still should be. That's the other side of it.
So if they're selling listed assets, what if they have sold some additional listed assets? What if they would have kept the trademarks?
They stayed in the rolled food business.
They did, but so how do you draw that line so that people down the road reading the court's opinion have some idea of what assets can be sold and what not? And I don't think they're taking this position, but what if they have sold?
The contract could have been written in such a way to have an airtight lockdown winner for your side, right? It would have been easy to write in there.
Well, in hindsight, a lot of things are easy to write in, Your Honor. That's correct. To the extent that there's any ambiguity.
I mean, the question, the way you're putting it is, who's shocked the more? Kraft, when it learns that it kept the rolled food business and continues to sell the infringing product, suddenly is guilty of infringement even though they had a covenant not to sue? Or General Mills, vastly surprised, right, that a piece of the business that doesn't really relate in a significant way to the rolled food business has been hived off by Kraft. Well, you say, whoopee, we can now sue them for infringement.
Well, Kraft looks at the agreement. It's not a long, complicated agreement. It's pretty clear. The rolled food business includes these listed assets. They decide, there's money on the table from this private equity buyout firm. We're going to take that money, and we're going to take our chances.
So your position then is that if Kraft succeeds in the rolled food business, engages in the rolled food business, and then after a period of time decides that it wants to shut down one of its two plants, continues in the rolled food business without that one plant, sells that plant to somebody else, and they're going to use that plant to make automobiles or something, that's it. They're out. They've lost the benefits of this agreement.
You do not have to go there, Your Honor, and here's why. They didn't sell some assets that got to be used for something else, all right? They sat and looked at assets that were paid for by another company that still operates under the name Farley, that's still in the candy and confection business out there. They did not have to do that. And they chose
to do that. What difference does it make whether the party that succeeds to these assets is in the candy business selling caramels or chocolates or something else? We're talking about the rolled food business.
And the rolled food business was defined by an agreement between the parties to include those trademarks and goodwill. So the rolled food business was defined. There's no dispute as to what it is. And they decided that even though that's the way it had been defined, they were going to take those defined listed assets and parcel some of them off. And that divests them of their successor's rights. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted.